both over here primarily to talk about Alive She Cried, which is an album of recordings that disappeared mysteriously and have found their way back into your hands.
Sort of like the Raiders of the Lost Ark at the last scene in the movie, when the Ark is put in this box and filed away somewhere in the back, and it's just put in, and it looks like every other box. Well, I think that happened to the Doors records, or the Doors tapes, except the tapes were mislabeled. Somebody had the wrong label, or it didn't have a label on it, and the tapes just disappeared. We knew they were somewhere in some storage facility in Los Angeles, but it was impossible to find them, and we assumed that they had been just lost or something. But then we said, wait a minute, they can't be lost. There must be, like, who knows how many boxes of tapes there are. You can't lose. I can understand losing one or two boxes, but this is impossible. So through a lengthy search, the hiring of a private investigator to missing persons, well, find a missing tapes. He couldn't find them either. And fortunately, Ben Edmonds, who is our manager, quote-unquote manager at the moment, was able to locate the tapes in the storage facility, and it was like, eureka, here they are. God, it's great. And Paul Rothschild proceeded to sit down and listen to all the tapes, popping cans as he went, and he culled out what he considered to be some of the best material, and then John and Robbie and I got together. I'm Ray Manzarek of the Doors, and the three of us got together and listened to approximately, who knows how many hours, 3-4 hours worth of material, and out of it we picked the best stuff to make Alive She Cried.
Robbie, which period of the Doors' career, musical career, did the recordings come from?
Well, most of it was done from 68 through 69, probably. And most of it was done on this one tour where we decided to record live, and we brought our own equipment, 8-track tape recorders with us. And it was in New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, and I think Boston. And a couple of the cuts come from a European television show, which we did, I think, in 69.
It's quite interesting, although 69 or the late 60s aren't that far away, recording techniques weren't as sophisticated as they are in the 80s, and what surprises me listening to the album is the quality of the recording now. Did you have to do anything magical to remix it to bring it up to the standards today, or was it pretty much as you left it in the can?
Well, Paul Rothschild, a wonderful producer, and Bruce Botnick was the original engineer on the project, so when we first recorded these things, and they did a fine job of getting it on the tape. But we did use all the techniques in the recording studio, state-of-the-art fidelity. The board is so much better today. The electronics are so much better, and we had everything separated, fortunately. Organ was on one track. Drums were on other tracks. Robbie had his track free. So Paul was able to do everything that you could possibly do to that guitar track. All right, let's take that guitar track and make it sound as good as we can possibly make it sound today. And we had a nice degree of separation. Had some leakage, of course, since it was a live situation. So on the organ track, you could hear the drums and a little bit of guitar and Jim's voice. So all of that had to be balanced and really had to be worked with properly. And Rothschild takes full responsibility for making it sound as good as it does. He's an excellent, excellent producer.
Robbie, the album is actually the only live album that the Doors ever released. I think all the rest of them were studio recordings, weren't they?
Well, no, we had an album called Absolutely Live, and that was from the same batch of recordings as this one comes from. But during that time, we picked different songs than we would have today, mainly because, like, for instance, with Light My Fire, that wasn't on the first live album. At that time, Light My Fire was our big popular song, and we wanted people to hear some other more obscure songs, So luckily we didn't use it then, we were able to use it now.
Light My Fire really became a rock anthem during its time. Indeed, I guess the Doors and Light My Fire synonymous as being probably what epitomized the whole idea of West Coast rock groups. In fact, I think probably the Doors were more influential in that department than any other band.
Well, perhaps over here, you know, certainly east of the Mississippi River in America, you know, we were very big in New York too, and the whole East Coast, and then extending back over into Europe. But in California, there were lots of, you know, San Francisco sound and the Los Angeles sound, Love and the Birds and bands like that, and all the bands up in San Francisco, the Jefferson Airplane and the Grateful Dead and Country Joe and the Fish. There were, between L.A. and San Francisco, there were just hundreds of great bands, and, you know, we just happened to be one of them.
When Jim Morrison died in Paris in the early 70s, was that the end of the Doors as a band, or did you carry on performing and keep the name together and write and record music?
We made two albums after Jim left the planet. One was called Other Voices, and the other was called Full Circle. And John, Ray, and Robbie did those two albums. But after that, the Doors were put to bed.
How did you feel about that? Because in many ways, people that wrote about The Doors or listened to their music or were critics of you always seemed to bring Jim into the front line, as it were, and left the rest of you, the three remaining members of The Doors, to just get on with it. How did you feel about that? Just, if you like, being the support band for a solo singer. Robbie?
Well, we were not just a support band for a solo singer, and we knew that. And, you know, we were all equally important in the band. But as far as the press was concerned, I guess the public too, all they wanted to know about was Morrison, because he was the front man, he was the crazy guy, and they all wanted to know about him. And actually that was fine with me, because I was content to sit in the background, and you know, Morrison caught a lot of flack from being the guy up in front, which we were shielded from. So it really didn't bother me too much.
So what happened to your own career when you finished doing the two Doors albums after Jim's death in, 71, I believe?
Well, let's see, that was 72, I guess. Well, it went rapidly downhill. what happened was, after the Doors broke up, we decided to come here to England and possibly find another singer or whatever. But we soon realized that that was a foolish idea, and ended up where John and myself formed a new group called the Butts Band, and with some English people, namely Jess Roden and Philip Chen and a guy named Roy Davis. And we went along in that, you know, I went along doing other solo projects, and I've been in music for, you know, since then.
Going back to Jim for a second again, he was considered very talented as a singer, but also as a writer, and in fact, in the last months of his life, he was in Paris, we are told, writing poetry and prose, various other literary things. Do you think if he'd lived, he would have become a great writer, become a modern contemporary writer, say like a Hemingway or Steinbeck?
I doubt if he would have been that kind of a writer, but, you know, it's hard to say what he would have done, but his writings were more on the order of a Rambo or, you know, some of your more greater poets. And not really in the novel. He wouldn't be in the novel field, I don't think. Although, you never know, but I think he was capable of writing anything. But I think he would have probably gotten into the films aspect of things and would have been probably a director.
Ray, Robbie mentioned that you came over here after Jim died and tried to form a group. Now, Britain and London in particular is a place that the Doors played when Jim was alive. You played a concert here, I think, at either the UFO Club or the Middle Earth. I can't remember now, but it was filmed by British Television. Mm-hmm. So there was quite a lot of interest in this mm-hmm. country around the Doors, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was at the Roundhouse. I don't know exactly what... what they called it at the time, but it was called The Doors Are Open, and wonderful, wonderful show, and great audience over here. That was that show was incredible. It was psychedelic West Coast California comes to London. It was The Doors and the Jefferson Airplane. I'd love to have seen that show back in 68. God, that was it was a great time, fabulous audience. And when he, after the last set, the last night, we walked out of the place and the sun was coming up. It was 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, and it was sunrise in London after playing two incredible nights. And it was certainly one of the high points of my career.
Much has been written about The Doors. In fact, there's now currently an illustrated history written by Danny Sugarman, which comes out almost simultaneous to the release of Alive She Cried, the live album. Will you be glad somewhere down the line to eventually put to bed the Doors as a group and stop talking about the band and continue doing something else?
Only when Morrison's words are known by the public. At that point, we will have done our job. And when Doors music is known and what Jim was actually saying, when you can get beyond the leather pants and get beyond the image of Jim Morrison to understand the mind of Jim Morrison, at that point, I'll be satisfied. And that's why we're here now, is because Jim said, listen to the words, man. Just listen to the words. Don't pay attention to what I do. Don't pay attention to anything else. Just listen to my lyrics. And if you get Jim Morrison's lyrics and really begin to understand his words, at that point, I have nothing more to say. But until that time, I'm going to tell you what he's talking about.
Well, aside from talking about Jim Morrison's words and what he was trying to say musically and lyrically, you've also been working on an opera, Karl Orff, I believe.
Carmina Burana, yes, Karl Orff, 1937 composition, modern, sort of contemporary Germanic music, and the cantata for full symphonic orchestra and a huge chorus. And what we've done, Philip Glass, an American avant-garde composer, is the producer. And what we did is reduce it to a... in essence, I suppose you could call it rock band synthesizers and chorus. We have a basic rock band playing jazz rock band, playing the pulsing foundation. The orchestral parts are all done by synthesizers, electronically generated sounds, and over the top of that we put a full chorus. And it's a wonderful album, and I'm very, very happy with it, and had a grand time recording it. And I hope Karl Orff, unfortunately, he's no longer with us. He left the planet also and went up to composer's heaven about 2 years ago. But I hope his spirit is happy.
What inspired you to record it?
Well, perhaps the ribald, bacchanalian, Dionysian sense of the music. It's curiously like Doors music or like Ray Manzarek piano style, and certainly the lyrics are very Morrison-esque. Renegade monks from the 12th, 13th century celebrating the joys of sex, drinking, the fecundity of the earth, springtime. It's Morrison-esque sort of things. It's about revelry, about just enjoying life and celebrating the how good it is to be alive and all the wonderful things of life and not being a closed off in a little monastery. Same thing Morrison was talking about. Morrison was talking about getting out there and being your own man on the planet, your own human being, and dancing madly on a hillside in front of a bonfire and just celebrating life and really getting into it. And that's what Karl Orff did with the music. I think he was inspired by the monk's words the same way the Doors were inspired by Morrison's words. And the music has a great similarity to it. And I just said, I'm going to do this. This is something, it's something I've wanted to do for a long time, a piece of music I've always loved. And the time came when I was able to realize a dream I've had for a long time.